Hallo, herzlich willkommen bei Nachgehackt, dem Podcast für IT-Security. Mein Name ist Henrike Tönnes und hier spreche ich mit Expertinnen und Experten über Sicherheit in der IT-Technik. Und zwar so, dass es alle verstehen. Alle Rechner hochgefahren? Dann kann's ja losgehen.
In our modern society, we all like to think that our way of thinking today is more inclusive and less biased than ever. That there is a rising awareness when it comes to racist, sexist, or otherwise limiting prejudices, especially in our language. We also live in a world that is increasingly influenced by the new technologies. AI like ChatGPT, for example, seem to be driving forces that catapult us into a modern future. However, most of the AI we use in our day-to-day life have been trained using data from the past. So the answers we get are very often a reflection of that past way of thinking and the biased ideas that come with it. My guest today has made it his goal to change the biases that have been fed into these new technologies. Bilal Safar is a professor of computer science at Research Center for Trustworthy Data Science and Security at Uyghur University Bochum, and he'll tell us all about his work today. Welcome, Bilal.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here with us. Before we get into the thick of things, I always ask everyone who's on the podcast, every guest, three introductory questions. I'd also like to pose them to you, if that's okay?
Thank you.
Very general questions. So the first one will be, if you think, or if you hear the term IT security, what is your immediate association with it?
Hacking somehow.
Hacking,
you know, so somebody's hacking something.
All right.
I need to protect it.
Okay. Hacking and protection.
Hacking and protection.
Sounds good. And what do you use your computer most for?
Only work.
Only work, okay.
Or I would say 95% of the time.
Okay.
Sometimes like 5% of the time my son is bored and then he wants to watch cartoon, like not on the TV but on the laptop. So that's I use it for non-work. But mostly I would say 95% of the time. Only for work.
Okay, and when you say work, you mean what kind of work do you do on the computer then?
Writing emails, writing research papers, sometimes writing code, which I really enjoy, and I don't get enough time to do that.
Okay.
Something that is really close to my heart. But yeah, I would say, you know, these few activities.
Okay. And last one, have you ever been hacked?
I'm just thinking. So, in the sense that I woke up, I found out I can't access my account or something.
I think not.
I did find out once that my password appeared in some, you know, dark web, something. I got a notification from somewhere. Hey, you know, your password for this account was somehow leaked.
Okay.
I think this was still, this was already the time when I was using, you know, different passwords for different accounts. There was a time when I was using the same password for everything.
Like we all did.
Yes. But I think I was beyond that point. So luckily, I think things were fine.
Okay.
I hope so.
Okay. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yes.
And we never really know, do we?
We never know.
No.
We never know.
Unfortunately not. But it's interesting that you say, so you get a notification saying, hey, your password has turned up on the darknet. I'm kind of like, okay.
That's just not fun.
No,
yeah.
It really isn't. Very scary. Okay, let's try and get into what kind of research work you're doing. I know this is a multifaceted business that you're in there, and we're trying to pick this focus today of unconscious bias. It's called unconscious for a reason. We will get into this. The first question that I would like to pose to you is AI, or are maybe, let's focus on large language models, are they fair?
It's a very tricky question.
I know.
In the sense that you'll find many examples of these models being unfair. So for example, you know, people showed that if you go to some of these LLMs and you say, hey, you know, two Muslims walked into a bar and you let it autocomplete, this would not say very nice things, or you could get these models to say, you know, things that are blatantly anti-immigrant. So mm-hmm. you could do a lot of these things. So with that definition, yes, these models are not fair.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are trying to do in our team is we are really trying to build a more systematic understanding of what fair is mm-hmm. and whether these models are fair. And what I mean by that is that, you know, in the real world, when we think about, you know, let's say I apply to Uni Bochum, I'm a student and I want to, you know, get admitted in the Uni, and then the hiring process might be unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Or I go to a bank and I apply for a loan
mm-hmm.
and that process might be unfair, right? So we are talking about very specific decision-making scenarios,
mm-hmm.
and we know, you know, what is the beneficial outcome that I want, and the distribution of that outcome, if it is different across different groups, we say, okay, you know, this is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Now with LLMs, they can do just so many things, right? So you can use the same LLM to do so many different tasks. And so just saying that one large language model is unfair, I feel is a very loaded question.
Yes.
Right? So yes. I think a better question, and that's what we try to ask, is okay, if I use this large language model for this specific task, is the model on that task unfair? Mm-hmm. So that is a sort of understanding that we are trying to build.
Okay. And what is the thinking that you're following right now, so at this very moment, what would the answer be to that question?
I think we're really trying to figure out, you know, what are all the different tasks where LLMs mm-hmm. can be, you know, very, very beneficial.
Yes.
And then we're trying to say, okay, for every specific task that we're considering, what does it mean for the model to be fair?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some things we're doing. But then there are also a lot of practical, you know, practicalities that we have to consider. So, for example, these models are very expensive to deploy. These are huge models. So you need, you know, very expensive hardware to deploy them. And if you want to scale them, it can get very expensive, right?
Yes.
And so what people do is it's very common to somehow make these models more efficient by changing them slightly. So you have a large language model, you train it, and then you make some changes to it, which make it more, you know, cheaper to run.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're also looking at what happens to the fairness of the model when you make it cheaper to run, because that might somehow change the behavior of the model.
Yes.
So we're trying to look at it in a rather, I would say, holistic manner.
So okay.
What happens to fairness in a lot of different settings?
Yes, and also with the fairness also to trustworthiness, for example, and this all interconnected, right?
It's all interconnected, so fairness is just one angle of it. We also want this model to reason
mm-hmm.
in a proper way, right? So if I ask a model what is 2 + 2 and it says 4, I don't want that the model has just, you know, memorized this thing, because then if I ask it a more complicated question, so I might ask the model, you know, what is 2 + 2 and it says 4, maybe it has memorized it. I'm not saying that's what LLMs, that's what the frontier LLMs mm-hmm. have done. Or if I ask it, what is 3 + 3, it says 6. And now I have built some sort of trust in the model. And now I ask it a question, which is a really difficult question,
yes.
whose answer I do not know.
Yes.
And I just trust the model because I thought, you know, 2 + 2, 4, the model was right.
Yeah.
So we're trying to also look into some of these aspects and figuring out, so we're trying to figure out, you know, are these models reasoning properly?
Yes.
And so fairness just fits a bigger picture.
Yes. And then when we come to questions that arise in society and we want to ask them things, these answers might be highly biased.
Indeed.
Yes. Also, and mainly because of the data that they've been fed with.
That is true as well. So
yes.
The models are in a way a reflection of the society, right? So they're just, if you think about how these models were trained, or a large part of their training is to just, you know, take some data, you know, from books or from internet and just predict the next word. Right, and so we know what all exists on the internet, or, you know, a lot of the historical data that we have. It does contain some biases.
Yes, well, in the introduction we said There's this term unconscious bias. And I would like you maybe to explain this a little bit. So what does that mean in the context of AI training in that case?
I would start actually from, you know, what does unconscious bias mean for me?
Yes,
as a person.
Yes,
and of course, my answer would be, people might disagree with it. But let's say I'm unconsciously biased, and I try to figure out, you know, what does it mean? So let's say, you know, I'm interacting with a group of people,
mm-hmm.
and I have built some stereotype in my head,
mm-hmm.
and let me just think of an example. I say, you know, this group of people is not very good at math.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So me, basically, you have a prejudice about me, very much. No, go ahead.
It's a completely hypothetical example, and it's made up. And of course, you can see I'm really, you know, wrong here, right? It is just a stereotype. I have, you know, heard it from somewhere. I made it in my head. I have no data to back it up, right? And I should actually, you know, stop right there and take some time to examine my, you know, prejudice or my stereotype, and so that's sort of how I think about unconscious bias. So this is how I would say, you know, one way in which I could be unconsciously biased, right?
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, if we now think about large language models, you know, these models are trained on some data, and let's say now I'm training my large language model, and
mm-hmm.
I was not very careful about, you know, the data that I fed to the model, and there was some biased data in there. So the model might just end up picking these, you know, correlations in the data, and then the model might be unconsciously biased. So that's one way in which I think about unconscious bias, or how unconscious bias creeps into, you know, models.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also many more subtle examples,
okay,
or subtle ways in which unconscious bias can come into the model. And one example I could think about is people come from different countries.
Yes.
And different countries, people from different countries have different demographic features, right? And if I am, say, I'm building a predictor based on heights of people,
mm-hmm.
then we know that people from different countries have different heights. So I can't quite, you know, if I'm trying to make a prediction based on somebody's height, and if I can apply that predictor on data from Germany,
mm-hmm.
I cannot apply this same predictor. I should be careful before I apply it on data of people from Pakistan, who tend to be shorter than people in Germany.
Yes.
So there are many different ways in which, you know, unconscious bias can come up.
Yes, yeah, even in seemingly very simple things.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
But of course, it changes the outcome.
Indeed. So, exactly.
Yeah. And this is one of the less impactful biases that we can have. I mean, what's the worst case scenario?
I would like to not imagine that.
Okay, yes.
Because again, that can get very, very, you know, really bad, really quick, in the sense that, so often we think about, right, so we say, okay, so here's a model,
mm-hmm.
and this model was biased, and, you know, let me take an example, right, so we say, you know, I have a model, and this was trained on data of, you know, people from Germany, and this model would be accurate on people from Germany, and not so accurate maybe on people from Pakistan. I say this because I'm from Pakistan,
yeah.
And so here the bias is relatively easy to notice,
mm-hmm.
right? I could say, hey, this model is very accurate on the population it was trained on. It is not so accurate on the other population, so there is some bias. Now, what's very tricky or very troubling with LLMs is that we will be using them as sources of information.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go to LLM and I could say, hey, tell me about people from Germany or people from Pakistan, right? So this is my source of knowledge. And if those responses end up being biased, then unconsciously I am learning biased facts about people.
Yes.
And these biased facts might later affect my own judgment about people.
Mm-hmm.
So these biased effects might, you know, really ripple through the society. And that is something that we should really watch out for.
Yes. And we better not imagine what happens when the bias is not unconscious but consciously implemented into these large language models.
That
right?
is indeed so. But I really hope that, you know, that would not happen. So.
Yeah, let's hold on to hope, maybe.
Indeed.
Not predict doom. Now, while this is all very interesting and something where I personally say, hey, let's be aware of this, why should everyday people pay attention to that? How does that affect them?
Well, algorithmic decision-making, you know, decision-making based on AI or ML, this is all around us, and, you know, by all indications, its presence will increase over time, right? So my car has some AI features in it, and it depends on AI models. It could, that in turn depend on some data that might have been biased. So we should care about it because these systems will increasingly surround us. And I don't want to scare us. These systems, they come with a lot of benefits, right?
Of course,
a lot of
yeah.
efficiency benefits, you know. And but since these systems are going to be around us, we should make sure that they are unbiased.
Yes. But now comes the crucial question. How, if at all, can we find out if, you know, there is bias in answers that we are looking for?
Right. So this is, again, this is a very active research area. And I think we're at the very beginning of it.
Yes.
But, you know, the research community is working very hard to build these tests. And for simple machine learning models, you know, the models that just predict, hey, you know, you get the loan or you do not get the loan. You get admitted or you do not get admitted. So people, you know, the research community has worked very hard to come up with metrics for detecting bias. And they have worked very hard to, you know, look at, you know, insights from social sciences, from law, and translate those insights into, you know, formulas in machine learning and say, okay, you know, this model, this very simple model is biased. And lots of us are trying to do a similar exercise for large language models. And our hope is that we will have, you know, good metrics for bias as we move forward.
Okay, so you are developing special tests or scenarios where you can find out.
Indeed.
Okay.
And the whole idea is that, you know, on a social level, we have some, you know, indication of or of what we consider bias. And so the idea is let's translate you know, this insight or this indication into precise formulas and tests that we can run to check if a model is biased.
I can imagine that, you know, before this technical implementation, there is a lot of very unpleasant, maybe also work of discussing, you know, so what are the premises, the social premises that we set in order to find out what we have to build.
Yes. I don't think it is unpleasant at all. I think it's very insightful. I think it actually encourages us to have very thoughtful discussions in society. And so one example I often give is, and this was one of the big success stories in my opinion, of thinking about decision making and bias in a more formal, more mathematical way, was that, let me give you an example. So we could say, let's take the example of this loan prediction model, right? And one could say, hey, you know, if people from different populations apply for the loan, then if 20% of people from one population get the loan, then 20% from another population should also get it. You know, that is my definition of what is fair. Now, according to some theories, we might contest it. And we might say, no, what I want to do is, so maybe in one population, people just don't return the loans that often, right? And so we could say, okay, what we want is, we want the model to be equally accurate on both populations. And one of the results that the, you know, this fairness and machine learning community found was that, hey, you know, these two metrics are based on two very different premises.
Yes.
And you cannot have them both at the same time. And I thought this really now, you know, this encourages us to have a deeper discussion at a societal level of what we mean by bias and how we address some of these biases. So in that way, I do not find these discussions unpleasant at all.
Yeah, maybe unpleasant only in the sense that it's maybe not so easy to actually, get on the same page with everyone.
Indeed. But I think a lot of, things in life worth having are not easy.
That's true. That's true. And what's your? How do you experience this discussion? Where do you have it? With who do you have it? And what do you get out of this thing?
I think it starts right from the lab, right? So we are a bunch of people discussing bias, and that's what I really like about this research, right? So my research is very close to everyday life.
Yes.
And I really draw a lot of energy out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this starts right at the lab. And then, of course, we have these discussions at academic conferences. And what I really like about our research community is that it's a very interdisciplinary community. There are people, who are, quote-unquote, core machine learning people. There are people from, law. There are people from social science. There are people from psychology. And they're all bringing in their insights, right? So... And they're all bringing in, what does it mean to be biased or unbiased or fair, from their sort of this angle. So this is a very, very vibrant community.
Very vibrant community. But isn't it also a very closed off community? I can imagine that, in university context or in research context, this is very vibrant and there's a lot of interdisciplinary, movement going on. But does this also, can this be transported outside this bubble as well?
Outside the bubble as in the real world implementation?
Yeah, as in, people who are interested in research and science, into the, real hands-on.
Right.
We're developing this now, or into society outside of academia, maybe.
Right. So I spent some time in industry after I graduated, and what I saw was that actually even in industry, people are spending a lot of thought, and people are spending a lot of time thinking about what does it mean for these models to be biased and ensuring that they are not biased. So so there are a lot of even outside of academia, there's a lot of effort being spent here. Mm-hmm. I do think that, I think you mentioned the other aspect, right? So I do think that this education could start, even sooner, right?
Yes.
So as students enter the undergraduate studies, right? So we could educate them that, hey, there are these machine learning models, this is how they work, and this is how the bias could, emerge, and this is how you could tackle it. So I think we could actually do even more of that.
I mean, when I studied, we were very, very much made aware of, don't rely on Wikipedia.
Right.
This sort of training now maybe can be just brought to...
Indeed. There's already some effort, but I totally agree that, we
could
probably
be more.
Need to expand that.
Yes,
indeed.
Okay. What would you say, who is, in the end, responsible for making AI fair? Is that academia? Is that the tech companies? Is that the government? Who is it? Where does this ultimately lie?
I think it's such a challenging problem, and it touches so many of us, and it just, the inputs to these models come from all of us, and for that reason, I think it's all of us, right? And everybody needs to do their part, in the sense that, if I'm a developer, I'm developing a new machine learning model, I need to make sure that, I do my part in ensuring that the model is unbiased. Now, let's say I'm the consumer of the model. I buy the model from the developer. Then it's also my job to make sure that I deploy it in a careful manner to make sure that it does not lead to bias. And that is the thing with machine learning, right? So we take these models and what makes machine learning, very compelling is, unlike traditional computer programs, you don't hard code some rules into it, right? So you just say, you show it some data and you say, okay, this is how you should make your decisions, and then you deploy it in the real world. And the expectation is that, it will be asked to make decision on the data that sort of resembles the training
yes.
data, right? But now in the real world, there might be some shifts happening.
I see.
There might be something that goes completely haywire. There might be a global pandemic, right? There might be something that we did not anticipate. And so the model might be, operating on data that is very different from its training data. And in that case, actually, it is my job as a deployer of the model to make sure that it is that I'm aware of any biases that might come up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the end, I see this, and of course, then there is the policy making and this
mm-hmm.
bias. I think these issues do not exist in a vacuum. Society
mm-hmm.
is a dynamic. Societies
yes.
are dynamic. Societies are evolving, and I think with that, what should be considered as bias should also evolve. So overall, I see this as a job, for all of us.
Mm-hmm. So basically, what can we do? Me as I, what could I, contribute?
Ah, that's a very good question. I should think a little bit about this. I think you should definitely make sure that any models that you are using. Are unbiased. If you find some biased patterns, I would encourage that you inform the developers, because it's something they might not have thought about.
Okay.
And again, this is the thing with machine learning, right? So you train a model in the lab, and you may not have considered all the different scenarios in
mm-hmm.
which it's going to be deployed. So I think that is definitely something that you should do.
Okay. But, for example, if I stumble on something that is maybe racist or maybe whatever, would it help if I then told, the
mm-hmm.
model, hey,
yes.
this is a very racist thing to say. This is,
right.
can I put this in? Will this have an impact? Or is that just, someone raging on the internet?
I'm trying to recall, because I think a lot of these, LLM providers, they do have these thumbs up, thumbs down sort of things, right?
Okay,
I think you
okay.
can actually provide feedback and say,
okay.
hey, this is not okay. And even if this thing does not exist, I'm sure they have some contact, right, where you could
yeah.
reach out and say, hey, this model is, has this behavior, maybe it should not do that.
Yeah, okay, very interesting. Do you think, honestly, that there will ever be an unbiased AI at all?
I think yes.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm excited about,
okay.
right? So
okay.
this is
yeah.
I think we can do that. I think we can actually have an unbiased society, and by extension I think we can actually
yes.
have unbiased machine learning models.
Yes.
And that is that's the goal that I aspire for in my day to day work.
Yes. Yes, and that we should aspire to in society as well.
Indeed.
To solve all of these problems, can maybe synthetic data be some sort of help, like
yes.
feeding, something that we want, that
yes.
we create into a model
Indeed.
Like this?
Indeed. It can be, and synthetic data is exactly right. So we say, hey, this is the data that I got. It was biased, and I know, I'm simplifying things.
Yes, of course.
And I know these were the biases. So let me adjust that data a little bit
yes.
so that I know the data is now unbiased. And
mm-hmm.
then if I feed it to the model will learn, the unbiased behavior. That is something you can do.
Okay.
There are techniques, and I'll, also works on these techniques. I've, in my past book, I have also done that.
Mm-hmm.
That you can say, okay, so my data is biased. I find it very difficult to fix the data.
Mm-hmm.
So let me add some mathematical, additions to the model so that the model still learns some unbiased behavior.
Okay.
So you can point the model in certain ways.
Okay.
So that is something you can definitely do. And I think given how complicated this bias topic is and given how difficult it is, I think we do need, a whole bunch of techniques in our toolbox to make them unbiased.
Yes, to counteract all of these things that have been said
exactly.
in the past. I imagine this is very tricky work, very like a big puzzle that you have to solve.
It is. You should be very careful. You
yes.
have to always, think about your assumptions. You have to think about them in an implicit manner. You have to say,
mm-hmm.
yeah, am I doing the right thing? You always have to be willing to change your assumptions, update your assumptions.
Yes. Self-reflect also.
You always have to self-reflect. You always have to, you know, seek out, you know, different perspectives and seek out, you know, critical feedback. But I find this this whole line of work very rewarding.
Is that also the reason or the main reason why you went into this research field?
I think... I almost accidentally, did I? Was it an accident? Maybe not.
Are there any accidents?
I came into this research field. I think I can't even fully remember what were all the, you know, events that led me here. But now that I'm here, I really like that I can draw inspiration from my everyday life.
Yes.
And I can bring it to my work. And when I think about, you know, all the positive impact that this research can have, so that is something that really excites me.
Yes, positive impact for society. Also, I mean, it is also a question, of course, of security and trustworthiness.
Absolutely.
All of these things that play a vital role, but it is also, of course, at the root of where we want to be as a society.
Indeed.
Yes,
indeed.
That's absolutely very interesting. Well, actually, this is just, you know, like the tip of the iceberg that we're talking about when we're talking about your research here.
It definitely is. There's a lot that I want to talk about. There's a lot of things I had to hold myself back. So
yes,
in a lot of places I thought I was getting too technical in this thing. But yes.
But maybe I can persuade you to come back and then we will talk about other aspects of your work.
Absolutely.
In a different episode. But thank you very much, because I think it's very important to generally raise awareness on all of these things that we're surrounded by,
mm-hmm.
by, you know, artificial intelligence that was ultimately created by humans, very flawed humans, very biased people, without wanting to be biased even.
Right.
So I think it's very good to see that this also has an impact now on our future and where we're going.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much for taking us by the hand and showing us.
And thanks so much for having me.
Yes. I won't let you go just yet. There's one more question that I'm asking everyone.
I'll have some more.
Yes, absolutely. Have some water. It's a very... Well, it depends on your answer. It might be very short or very long, because this is ultimately an IT security podcast. So all the experts that I have here in this chair where you're sitting have to answer the question of, if you could give a piece of advice to our listeners out there in terms of being safe, IT security, a takeaway, so to speak, a tip of some sort, what would you tell them?
It's a very, very good question. I would just say, you know, always reevaluate your assumptions about what you see.
That is a very, very good
what I would say.
Always reevaluate your assumptions in real life and also online.
Online.
Yes.
Online.
All right. Bilal, thank you very much for being here. It was a great pleasure.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Das war Nachgehackt, der IT-Security-Podcast. Ich hoffe, ihr habt heute genauso viel über IT-Sicherheit gelernt wie ich. Vergesst nicht, uns zu abonnieren, damit ihr keine Folge verpasst. Bis zum nächsten Mal und bleibt sicher! Nachgehackt ist eine Produktion von Cube 5 und dem Exzellenzcluster CASA am Horst-Görz-Institut für IT-Sicherheit sowie der FISEC GmbH in Zusammenarbeit mit der Bochum Wirtschaftsentwicklung und Eurobits.